I needed to get new scrapers, razor scrapers. And so I go online, Amazon Basics, why not? And I look, Amazon Basics, the name. You buy 100 pack of these. 100 pack. How the hell is that? Like, is this Costco? What is, this is more than a contractor would use in his entire career. I went through a 10-pack of these in about a decade, and now I've got stuff that's going to be generational. What the hell, Bezos?
You know, I was wondering before we started, I'm like, we got two politicians in the background. Is Two's going to do his rant? I'm like, you know, Nathan has no idea what's coming at him. I'm like, what? And we're just Nathan's talking about colorful language, you know? Mashup 89, folks. Welcome to Tuesday Mashup. Thanks for tuning in. We're starting right on time. I was like, wait a second. I don't know if I'm bringing Twos in or not. I'm like, we just talked about all this. Ah, nobody cares. I'm happy you didn't get stage fright. You didn't. Anyways, how's everything going this week, Twos?
It's going good. The weather's
balmy. Nice. It's balmy. It's a balmy minus like 24. Yeah, it's great. It's great.
Just as soon as it turned around, it got a couple degrees warmer. You could stay out all day.
It's true. It's true. Yep. We're going to hop right to the first thing. You know, normally me and Tuz, we kind of like to warm everybody up, but we got two guys sitting in the background. We're joined by a couple of politicians.
First
I'm feeling pretty special on this side. Yeah. We get joined by MLA of Lac-Saint and Parkland. Most people have remembered him from the podcast. He's been on multiple times, Shane Getson. And then the MLA of Lethbridge East and the Minister of Affordability and Utilities, Nathan
and Deputy Premier, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't know. We'll bring him in. I think. How's it going, boys?
It's going great. Yeah, Tuesday, I was deputy premier. I got a demotion in that front election.
What a way to start the Tuesday mashup. Hey, Tuesday, really sewering the guy. Hey,
now, okay, Getson's still friends with me, but I don't know what it means if you're friends with a whip. That's kind of a bad news item normally.
Well, I got friends in low places.
Apologies, Nathan.
No worries. No worries, Steve.
Well, let's start here. Alberta Grid solar panel discussion. Yeah, I'm going to pull us back out of that and just say I think I was sitting on the couch, folks, like so many other people. Oilers were playing, and you're sitting there, and you're watching the game. Tuz wasn't watching the game. He's a Flames fan, and I don't even want to get into Nathan and see if I'm seeing by the face that he is not a Flames fan. That's good to know. Then it all comes out. The emergency alert comes out. It says, you know, reduce right away. We don't want to have rolling blackouts. And you're going, what is going on? It's like minus 42 outside right now. Boys, have at her, because there was a lot of us, I think, probably the majority of the population of Alberta. But I was getting texts from all my buddies in the States, everything. Like, what is going on? Boys, what is going on?
Well, it was a perfect storm against Alberta on Saturday night. We had a massive cold front that really impacted the grids in BC, Saskatchewan, Montana, down in Idaho. Idaho had a grid alert, and they pulled all the surplus electricity out of Montana, so we weren't able to gather it from there. We had a couple thermal generators go offline. And then, of course, when it's dark, we're not getting any solar. And on Saturday, we didn't have any wind generation, so we were really low in our generation capacity and our ability to pull from our neighboring jurisdictions. And then we kept watching our demand go up. So we got real close to that threshold, and we put out the emergency alert. And I have to say, Albertans rose to the challenge. They were incredible. Within 1 minute, 100 megawatts of load was offline. And in less than about 5 minutes, 200 megawatts. It saved us from the brink, and it was pretty powerful. That's for sure.
Yeah, you can see the chart right there.
Yeah, this is where it just dropped right off when the alarm went off.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. I'll tell you, going through all that for a few hours before, as we're trying to make these decisions, to see that kind of response, to be honest, I've never been more proud to be Albertan. Mm-hmm. I've never been more proud to be Canadian, that when you're in a tough spot, I think it literally means you do some math, it's somewhere around 500,000 people turned out their lights and did a little bit of work for Alberta. It was pretty tremendous. I got a little emotional, I will say.
So you're saying, forgive me, I'm going, like, how hard was it to make that call, A1? Let's just start with the emergency alert. Like, was that like, we gotta pull this trigger, like, we're getting awfully close? And then my next question after that goes, what does awfully close even mean? If it was all of a sudden, like, the entire Alberta just goes black? Are we just black in the middle of December, or December, in the middle of January?
Yeah, not quite. Well, it was tough. Like, we were talking with the ISO. Obviously, they're making recommendations and they're telling us how close we are. We were less than 100 megawatts away from not having enough energy. And we were talking with the Premier's office. We were talking with the office of the Minister of Public Safety, Mike Ellis. Mm-hmm. And we were working on the wording, like, what do? We don't want to panic people. We don't want to scare people. We don't want to over-exaggerate. And then we made the decision that we needed to let people know that this is how close, and we'll see how much people respond. And so, like I said, we were under 100 megawatts, and all we needed was another generator to go down or a bit of a surge in the system, and we would have had some rolling brownouts, which is a scary, scary situation.
Okay, so, perfect. That's, I mean, not that, but I was curious as to if it was going to be more than we could provide, what would it look like specifically? And that's what it would be, was rolling brownouts.
Yeah. So basically what the ISO has to do is you pick regions and say, your turn for half an hour to an hour, you're not going to get any electricity. And so everybody's really sitting in the dark because we have to turn off that section of the grid to shed load. And then we say, okay, it's cold enough. We can't leave you in the cold and dark that much longer. Now we got to go to the next region. And so that's like triage for the electricity system. Not fun. Nobody wants to have to make that decision.
Which place would you pick first, and why would it be Edmonton?
Not me. The ISO has to make those decisions, and hopefully they would probably be looking at more non-essential areas, like not the downtown or not anywhere that's got a hospital, probably more commercial areas, that kind of thing. But again, it's triage. So now you're picking where to go first, and nobody wants to be in that position. So we're just thankful we didn't have to make those kind of decisions.
Well, then I would assume, too, you'd be cognizant of major industries. Like, I mean, you start knocking down plants and going to flare and cycle and everything else. There's some pretty big things, you know. And then we saw some of the comments coming back from some of the folks that don't necessarily understand the grid, how it works, what's required for power allocation to literally keep the services going. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw a couple of folks saying, well, we should knock down industry. Well, yeah, that's great. Yeah. How do you get everything to the actual houses and residences and the farms and everything else? You start knocking them down. So thank goodness there's a really good sophisticated system and behind the scenes to balance all the loads to make sure that we don't have these spikes that Minister's talking about here. But again, I think you can sense my frustrations on this item here too. Like many Albertans, how in the heck does Alberta, an energy rich province, an energy superpower within our own country, get ourselves into this pickle? And that's, I think, the biggest concern that a lot of us have had.
Did you guys reach out to anybody aside from the alert? Like, for example, I saw a bunch of pictures of downtown Calgary and Edmonton that were still lit up pretty well. Did you guys talk to anybody who might be just using stuff to keep lights on and whatever else? Were there conversations outside of the alert with maybe some potentially large power draws?
Well, industry, certainly, because they're known entities and they're in one place. But those downtown towers can have fractional ownership or a different maintenance company. The owner could be somewhere in Europe. Who knows, right? Like, we don't have a registry of that. So it was just a blanket call. And then we learned that, hey, we've got to do a little bit better. So the next day on Sunday, we were reaching out to commercial and corporate industry a little bit more, particularly through the chambers, saying, hey, could you help us out in those realms a little bit more? Mm-hmm. We had a message tweeted out by the city of Edmonton, actually, that the city decided to turn off all their unused buildings, all the lights. So they got the message. But the first night, Saturday night, that was a learning experience. We didn't really know what the response was going to be. We didn't know how it was going to be impacted. We certainly didn't expect that level of participation that fast. I'm absolutely thrilled and blown away that it happened like that. And yeah, we're taking lessons learned. But to Shane's point, we are part of NERC, the North American Electricity Regulatory Commission, or whatever NERC stands for, something like that. Very set rules and protocols for how do you approach these and how the whole system's managed. The emergency alert was a first ever in Alberta's history. So, I mean, it was overwhelmingly a success. We don't want to use that tool randomly. It's got to hit a pretty significant threshold before we use it. But now we know what can be accomplished by it and how to do it even better next time, if we ever have a next time.
Gents, you guys, no, I'm not trying to date you, but you're older than me, I think. Anyways, has this happened before? Like, have we ever gotten to where we're, going back to Shane's point, we're this energy-rich province. We're sitting on it all. I can't remember any time as a kid. Now, certainly things have changed. We've been growing and everything else. But has this ever happened before?
I've learned from the ISO 2013 during the floods. We actually got to very similar levels of close to our threshold because so many plants were down. But we didn't have to issue an emergency alert because the entire province was sort of already on emergency and everybody was doing what they could. This is the first time ever for an actual emergency alert on everybody's cell phone saying, hey, we're close to the grid. But some of the history in that honestly goes back to the early transition off of coal power, because coal power was incredibly reliable. You fuel it up, you turn it on, and she goes. And it created heat so that the temperature didn't have quite the same impact as it does on natural gas. I don't think natural gas burns quite as hot. Also doesn't have the same kind of emissions. And we all know that not every single coal plant converted to natural gas. So we had a major dip in our thermal capacity, our dispatchable capacity. And a lot of what came online was renewables, which they have great qualities. I'm not going to lie. No emitting and very low cost.
But at minus 45, Nathan, maybe they're not the thing. I mean, we can say the quiet part out loud.
That's right. You know what? It's amazing how many people don't always realize that when it's dark outside, we're not getting any solar generation. And when the wind's not blowing, we're not getting any of that. So then where we really felt it.
Yeah, and further to that, Minister, too. So prior life, I mean, I've worked on the Montana tie line, of which now Berkshire Hathaway has purchased that. We had 350 windmills down around that Lethbridge country that we put in place for that. So these are some of the elements I grew up with or in my career. Some of the metallurgy and some of the items that are actually required, also the materials that they're on these windmills, they're fiberglass. Mm-hmm. You get minus 40 degrees on fiberglass, and I'm an aviator as well. You want to talk about a big prop shattering? You want to talk about real impacts on some of
that
these things?
That just happened in Prince Edward Island.
Yeah, well, there's physical limitations to this. And my frustration and irritation when we get into the whole renewable file, because again, Minister said it, Nathan, you said it well, we're not against it. But there are physical limitations and properties to these. Mm-hmm. So the problem that I find oftentimes is when practicality engineering gets outweighed by fairy tales and pixie dust because someone's driving an ideology. This stuff gets derailed nonstop. Yeah. I'm frustrated here. Like we have to, and I think this emergency alert, first time in Alberta history, it just exemplifies this. We have to cognizantly go into this and looking at the technical challenges that we have, because this is our warning shot across the bow.
Yeah.
Drop the politics, work the problem, come up with a solution, because Albertans deserve this. And, yeah. You know, Nathan, when you and I were down in Kansas City, it was the same thing in the Midwest. Texas just happened at that time. They had a freak ice storm that kind of wiped out a bunch of their renewables. Mm-hmm. Everyone was giving us a warning sign 2 years ago down in their grid of how fragile it was. And there's where the frustration comes to pass. Park the damn politics here, guys. It's not about renewables. It's not about one form or energy or the other. It's making sure we have a diversified system in place and make sure we cover those base loads. So again, Nathan, to your point, those coal-fired power plants were literally sitting in my backyard and they got shut down. Yeah. I know how they ran those, the old plant operators with supercritical boilers. Your tolerances of jacking those things up and bringing them down wasn't there. You can throttle them quite readily and respond quite readily when you're on natural gas. But that steady state, that baseload, I don't think we found anything other than nuclear that literally gives you that steady state, that constant base load of power that you need when you need it. And it's dependable right there. Like that's part of the reality.
So are you guys talking at all about facilitating construction of more natural gas capacity or nuclear, maybe working with the Minister of Red Tape Reduction, anything like that?
Well, we got more natural gas coming online. Cascade is, they already put the first megawatt on, and hopefully we're going to get that 900 megawatts within weeks. We're really hopeful for that. We've got Capital Power with their twin units with another 900 megawatts the first half of this year, so we're excited about that. And today we did the announcement with Capital Power and OPG for them to explore an SMR, a small modular nuclear reactor. So we are very excited about that. We're really close to being completed all of our inquiries into our market, in our system, our grid, land usage, all of that. And we're going to have a tremendous report by about the early part of March to share with the province our vision, where we're going. And guess what? We're really working on bringing common sense, reliability, affordability, and all the things that we need back into the political realm. I know, hold on to your hats. That's a politician talking, that we're going to let common sense, engineering, and good planning back to govern the day. So I'm really excited about where we're going with that.
Okay. Now I got to ask real quick.
Last question then, and we'll let Nathan out. I promised him 15 minutes. We're at 16 already.
I'm sorry.
No. One more.
Right. Okay. Here's the thing. No pussyfooting allowed on this. Sure. There's some very credible anonymous sources on Twitter who are claiming that Danielle Smith personally put the grids offline because she doesn't like electric vehicles. How substantiated is that?
I would say completely unsubstantiated. She's away right now.
She has an alibi.
She's got a very solid alibi. Very solid alibi. I think that's why the current deputy premier, not me, Mike Ellis, the current deputy premier, was involved with all this. Not only on his file as a minister of public safety, but yeah, not credible at all. And same with me. I didn't do it. Maybe Getson. He's got a little bit of a dark history, but
he's blushing right now.
Yeah, he is a little.
Well, I think it's my camera. I'm noticing that too. I'm the only one with a red screen here in my face. I'm not sure what's going on there. Maybe I'm having a heart attack and don't even know it. Or I'm trying to control my cool on this file and just not.
Well, you know, those heart attacks are pretty contagious these days. So who knows, Nathan? Any final thoughts on this before we let you out of here? I'm a couple minutes over time, but appreciate you coming on and updating us and the audience. But if there's anything you want to add, please feel free.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for having some straight talk. And Getson, always part of that in our caucus. Love the guy. That's what we're trying to do. We are trying to bring a very, very practical, common sense, hardworking Albertan perspective to the grid. We need our grid to be as efficient and optimized as our great tradesmen and women. And we need it to be reliable. And at the very end of the day, we also need it to be affordable. That's what we're going for. And we've asked a lot of good people for their contribution. I'm very, very pleased with the direction Albert is going to be going in just a couple months.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us, Nathan. We're going to keep Getson here for a couple more minutes. And as we let Nathan out, we'll try not to get MLA Getson to say anything too crazy. I don't promise that, but buckle up, folks, okay?
Well, I'm the whip now, so I only get in trouble with myself and the premier, so I got to set a good standard here, fellas.
Okay, Australia's upside-down wind farm. We're going to start here, okay? Getson's agreed to stick in for a couple, and we're going to start with the wind farm. It's the 20th anniversary of the commissioning of the Chelicum Hills Wind Farm in Victoria. Twos, you know what the heck this story was about, because okay. I read it and I'm like, I don't know what Twos is trying. I was pretty dense today, I'm not going to lie.
Okay, well, just so what happened was that there was this article, which was kind of meant to be a bit of a puff piece, you know, a celebratory thing about the 20th anniversary of this major wind farm. And it looked at these other major wind farms that had been brought online at the same time. And I just thought it was funny. First off, here's their 12-month rolling average output. And the top of the grid is 50%. Like, it's just they didn't even bother putting the top half of the percentages in, because that's where wind power is at. And then this is it normalized and all put together. And then the other thing is, this is looking at their break-even point. So when they got brought online, and then there's one that got up to, it looks like just over 1.5 million. There's two that after 20 years still haven't broke even, and then the rest are somewhere in the middle. Now, interesting thing is that, and this is, you know, to their credit, they're fairly honest about this, I thought. They didn't take into account cost of debt, maintenance costs, even the time value of money, or inflation, probably, because that's not totally clear in the article. And then if you look, there was another one. I just found a little reference to wind maintenance costs at $42,000 to $48,000 per year USD, which if you translate that into Australian dollars, you end up with them. The best one they had is a little bit below break even with very conservative estimates in there. And so anyways, this is the 20-year anniversary of this thing, and it still hasn't made any money. It still hasn't made back its investment. I just thought it was kind of funny that this, and one of the problems, Shane, you probably know more about this than I do, is that information on wind farms is very scarce, and it's hard to parse through what's out there, and you end up having to compare, okay, well, this is the way it is in this region, but there's no information in another region, so I've got to assume it's going to be roughly the same. And so anyway, and granted, these are 20-year-old windmills, but we don't have any data on any of the current ones. This is what we're given, and they can't even cover their costs.
Yeah, there's a ton of sunk costs that go into these things. I mean, again, I can speak when, you know, we were throwing in those few, we partnered up with another company and we had these 350 windmills, and that was my first exposure to it. Mm-hmm. You know, I loved the project. It was great in concept. It was really interesting. And then you start tearing into it, right? Like there's, at that time, it was almost novel to that approach. It was a lot of good PR going into it. We were trying to get the renewables online. It was a lot of hedging. You know, Enron was just kind of ending when this project was started in the middle of it. Like, honestly, like that's part of the thing that was taking place. And there was some tongue in cheek at that time. If it weren't for grants, you wouldn't see any of these things going up in the air. So you're almost creating a false market at that time to try to get some early adapters to do it. Now, do I think that there's a place for them? Absolutely. But to your point on this, when you try to look at the actual numbers or have a conversation with someone on the actual numbers of the upfront cost, the sunk cost that you have, the operational costs, and then cleanup and restoration on the back end, there is...
That's the other thing is that, yeah, the reclamation is nowhere on here either.
Well, it's almost become like a theology. You get in these conversations and people get cross-threaded on it. And, you know, again, put on my technical hat, when you're looking at any of these things, you want a suite of options that are in your back pocket if you're looking at a grid or even a viable project. But there has to be incentives on the front end if it's something new and emerging. And then you've got a market conditions. Okay, we've got that now. You can pull it in. But yeah, you're right. These things do not come for free. And it just irks me when people say that, well, it's free energy. Nothing is ever friggin' free. Mm-hmm. The other one too is the restoration. They're just now starting to bring out windmill blades. So Siemens was telling us that one was over in Germany recently, as this October, the second generation of the windmill blades are coming out where they can actually recycle them. So everything you have right now, the existing fleet that's been out there, they're throwaways.
Just gets buried.
They're throwaways. There was one gent from, I want to say it wasn't Norway. Was Denmark. We met on this train. It was a Czech train running through from Prague basically into to Dresden is where we're heading. Mm-hmm. He was telling us they never used to have landfills until they got windmills. Like this is part of the thing that comes with it that no one wants to talk about. So if you're going to look at this rationally, then yeah, you have upfront sunk costs, you have operational costs, you have cleanup and restoration costs, no different than any other power generating operation they have.
Well, I would say the one difference, or at least as it looks right now, and I think maybe that's one thing that you guys are probably addressing with the moratorium, is that the abandonment regulations seem to be a little bit fast and loose. And well, it's just sort
because
of,
they weren't. Yeah, because it's brand new. Like if you look at the energy sector, mm-hmm. when you talk to a farmer, and this is just 30,000 foot view, you know, kind of grassroots, fence post, Timothy in your mouth conversation, right? When a lot of these prospects were out there for either windmills or solar farms, everyone, every farmer out there who's ever dealt in the energy sector kind of understands what the rules are for cleanup, restoration, soils management, those type of things, mm-hmm. consultation, stakeholder engagement, inclusive of the municipality or the, you know, the counties that you're participating in. When it comes to the electricity file, it didn't have it set up the same way. Like the same rules were not in place as we would just assume it was for dropping in a well site or mm-hmm. cleanup and restoration. It wasn't there. So that's where we had, and you know, Minister Newdorf has done a phenomenal job on this file. That's where you're starting to pull this together and go, okay, holy crow here. You've got tons of things that potentially could go sideways on us. 80% of the overall investment in the country at the time was in Alberta in renewables. Like all the renewables, 80% was taking place here. It was the Wild West. So at one portion, we're trying to make sure that we've got viable farmland. We're trying to get irrigation put into these areas. You're trying to make sure that you're not rebuilding a grid and putting a ton of redundancy in the system to cover shortfalls when it's not there. You're double building, double handling, and we needed to get the rules in place. And moreover, our regulatory bodies needed to have something modernized, hence the pause. And the pause, when ministers looking at this, obviously spoke to the entire file, not just a segment of it. So coming out of the gate on this, all of that should have been contemplated and baked into it. And then when that rolls out at the in that March timeline, I think everyone will be able to have a safe bet of how we're going forward on this.
Do you guys feel like you kind of dropped the ball a little bit in terms of the marketing, so to speak, of the moratorium?
Nope.
Okay.
Yeah, no, like honestly, when we were sitting, well, here's part of it, right? How hard do I want to lean into it and try to explain to everybody what I just said now? It's the same effort. It's yeah. whatever's picked up in the news headlines. So
yep,
as fair. An example, yeah. So, and it's relevant. Like we don't think of how things can go sideways depending on which news anchor is saying what, where, and how far that broadcast goes. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you full well, when we met with a bunch of the consulate generals that we hadn't met with as a government since 2018, a lot of these questions came up on the renewable file and what are you doing in your green file? The explanation I just gave, you know, pretty much answered everything and it takes yep. away all their concerns. But we are not going to get a fair shake depending on what's going on out there. I think it'll be a little bit more fair now at this point after everyone saw a blessed emergency alert on the weekend. Mm-hmm. Like you got to understand we're trying to address the issue. We're not against it. It has to be an integrated solution.
No, one more question.
Okay, I'm trying to buzz Getz in here, and Tooze keeps asking the questions. I'm supposed to buzz.
No, well, this is okay. I'm
trying to buzz the politician, folks. Ask the right. question, Tooze.
So Shane, the oil patch gets fined quite heavily anytime they kill a bird. Are you guys looking at, or would you ever look at doing that for windmills?
Yeah, I can't comment on that. Like, I honestly, I don't know because it's behind. Okay, yeah, it's behind the wire with Newdorf and those things. But I would suggest that yeah, we have to look at these things equally. If environment is a concern, and if vegetation and flora and fauna is relevant, then you have to look at it in the same type of context. Absolutely.
Yeah, I know he was pressed for time. I wanted to ask him that, but yeah,
TMX. Okay. Getz right. variants. Can we move on?
Yes.
Can we move on? I don't know what I'm going to do. Are we going to stay here for 4 hours or is this a Tuesday mashup?
I would be fine with that.
But this is a Tuesday mashup where we're going to move on. TMX Getz variants, folks. We're moving on to the next one. Here we go. We got like 40 headlines this week. It's kind of unreal. The commission of the CER has approved Trans Mountain variants application with conditions. The reasons for the decision, blah, 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 blah. This was a huge thing. Either way, they're going to allow them to use a different diameter of pipe, correct, Tooze, if I read that correct?
Yeah, so if and jump in at any point, Shane, my understanding was that they were having trouble drilling underneath the river, and they thought that they would have a higher probability of success with a smaller diameter hole. And so they needed to apply for basically just okaying a change order with the government at what seemed like a very late point in the game, to be honest. And they got the okay for it, which means that they can move forward. Not in that tweet, apparently they secured another $2 billion worth of funding. So that $30 billion price tag hasn't formally been announced to be up to 32, but they got an extra $2 billion worth of loans for it. So look for that soon.
How excited are you about the Trans Mountain pipeline there, Getson?
So I'm excited to finally get throughput going through it. It's probably one of the most expensive pipelines we've ever built. Take a $9 to $12 billion project and turn it into 32 to 40. That's what we're seeing. So as soon as you get government involved, regardless of the levels of government, I would, you know, have some opinions on this. As soon as you get governments involved that aren't pipeline, but they're really good at spending taxpayer dollars, this is what you get. Is it untoward to have a couple drills or something go sideways, especially in some of those rocky conditions out there? So typically what you're doing is when you're doing your drills, you're oversizing your size of your drills when your reamers go through on that, and then you're pulling it back. So you want to have a couple diameter inches over. So if they had to restrict it because they're running into geotech issues, that's no big deal. It's going to be heavy wall through those sections anyway. They'll deal with it on the wall thickness and some of their pump throughputs. Like, that's not a big deal. The issue, the a lot of the challenges with that job literally came down to the federal government getting involved and creating a ton of these issues.
But they're almost done.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Now, it seems to me, when you look at the timeline, that just because this came out, we were talking about it when it was like 97% completed. Now, in terms of project management for a pipeline, you don't necessarily have to start at this end and go all the way to that end, as I'm sure you know. Why did this issue seem to come up at the 11th hour? Why was this? If this was the...
Toots has been very critical that they should have figured this out from the beginning and not
this,
at the end.
I feel like this should have been the first thing they did. Was...
Yeah, no, not when it comes to drills. So there's a little bit of voodoo involved when you do drills. Typically, what you'll do is you have your crossing methodology when you're approved for it. You'll have like a three-strike rule. If you can try to get it, can't, then you would go to your secondary option for crossing. Typically, if you're doing a trenchless drilling, your alternate option in this case, in most cases, would be an open cut in those areas. So not knowing the circumstances, the fact that they're reducing diameter size would probably have precluded them from having to go to an open cut option.
Okay. All right. But why not do it at an earlier stage, I guess? Because, I mean, they've been digging this for years.
Well, it depends on construction methodology. Like, what you try to do, and again, I'm trying, as a politician, not trying to say anything untoward against another project or who may have done what or armchair quarterback it. But typically what you want to do is, so you kind of made a comment that you don't have to go in a linear fashion. Well, typically you try to, because otherwise you have a bunch of move-arounds. So if you have contiguous right-of-way and you have a contiguous line in your construction, it's an assembly line. What really gets pricey is when you have to jump your crews and move them around, then your production goes way out the window.
That would
if you
sense.
Have to leave a bunch of open sections and you get a bunch of tie-in welds to take care of, that blows your budget out the window. I typically, in the companies I work for, we would try to get our crossings out of the way with first. So you know in your first or second season, if you had contiguous right-of-way, once you got there, you would string your pipe out into it. Leaving your crossings to the last, not the best thing. But I can't speak on their schedule and specifics. I know folks that are on those jobs and are coming off of those jobs that have given me some insight, but that would be untowards for me to comment on that. So it's not atypical that you wouldn't, if you had your crossings figured out, if their fit is hitting the shan and they're getting tied up against the wall, they've changed the diameter size, like that's whatever. It's one of those things. But I get frustrated on is the permitting process where they've been delayed by shooting themselves in their own feet of managing the job.
Hey, Shane, can you stick around for one more headline? You tell me if this is something you want to talk about. I feel like it's something you kind of know a little bit about, the media void and then truckers, although it's farmers, German truckers and the media void. I mean, there's truckers, the giant farmer protest. Are you interested in commenting on, you were just over in Germany. Would you be interested in tagging around for this one?
You yeah, can't sure. Put so far, so good. Guys, you give me a lot of latitude.
I certainly can. Like, there's been like the craziest thing about this entire thing, folks.
I'm sorry. Is the statue part of the convoy?
No,
well, that's in Berlin. It looks like
it's in Berlin. Yeah, in Berlin, it's just like they've just like shut down everything. It's
literally like a big traffic circle in the center of the city. It's absolutely gorgeous when you see it.
So this has been going on now for, you know, well, and of course you can't see the entire thing, but regardless, like there's just video after video after video of, I can just scroll down. Here's another one of all the farmers, all the tractors, right? Just like everywhere, kind of gives you a little bit of the feeling of what the truckers convoy here in Canada was. And of course the media void, same thing getting said over and over again is nobody's hearing about it. It's like, well, here in Canada, we know all too well about that. Have you heard anything about Germany, Shane? You were over there. Do you have any comments? Or just do you want to just talk about media for a second and the fact they got their own agenda?
Well, I think Germany's interesting. Like, actually, it's a new country. You know, I think we kind of talked about that a little bit. So this is the first generation that's been whole as a country since the wall came down, which was pretty neat to get on side with. Their federal government is also a coalition government. It's based of three different colored parties, basically the green, the yellows, and the red. The red and the yellow were predominantly more of a conservative side. The greens are like way hard left type item. A lot of the policies for them to form their coalition and keep moving forward are a balancing act of compromise in ideologies and politics. For me to see some of those greener policies that have been so pervasive and quite frankly, in my opinion, a little too harsh, we've never tolerated here, that some of the farmers, the folks, the boots on the ground are pushing back against it, I find it encouraging. So I think that those other two parties will now have some support, if it were, to work with their colleagues in that coalition to say, hey, maybe we've gone too far in this area, we have to throttle back. As far as the media outlet or non-coverage, that seems to be a global phenomenon taking place, but more in the countries where their media is a little bit more censored, like here. I'm not surprised we're not hearing about it here. Like,
yeah,
I took a quick trip totally down to South Dakota over the Christmas break, and all of a sudden my phone still wouldn't pick up media feeds down there because apparently I have a Canadian SIM card. Like, that was pretty wild for me.
There's never a dull day up north, is there?
Nope.
Thank you so much for hopping on with us, Shane. Always appreciate it. Twos, if you got one final question, are you good? I can just see I'm making them squirm on that side.
No, it's Shane's a very easy guy to talk to, and it's easy to pick his brain, and I get carried away sometimes, and I'm not going to apologize for it.
Thanks for hopping on with us, Shane. We'll let you out of here so we can go back to our debauchery that we do on this show when it comes to bridges and other stupidity.
And twos, you have my full authorization when I'm not on to rhyme thing with truckers as much as you want.
Will do.
Oh, God. We're just cruising along here, Shane, you know?
All right.
All right. Okay. Thanks, Shane.
All right.
Okay. Here we go. All right.
Like I'm flipping a switch.
All right. The politicians are off. We can go back to the regular scheduled show here, folks. A bridge too far. We're into the rapid fire. Twos is into the rapid fire again. Okay. Here we go. A busy pedestrian overpass in the city's northeast has been shuttered and deemed unsafe due to aging just weeks after it got a $23,000 art mural. They're going to
So they spent $23,000. On this pedestrian overpass,
and she got
somebody, and then somebody 3 weeks later was like, "Is it safe to walk on still, though?" Nope, we're gonna have to tear it down. Okay,
an apple a day. This is rapid fire. You wanted this, too. So I'm gonna be fast on you, even if it's dead as a doornail. That old iPhone in your junk drawer could be worth up to $150. They got a proposed settlement and class action lawsuit. Apple has agreed to pay out $14.4 million to Canadians who owned an iPhone 6 or iPhone 7 and downloaded a new version of the iOS operating system before December 21st, 2016.
Yeah, so they said, we don't admit guilt, but we're okay with this. Which means we're not going to say we're guilty, but we're super fucking guilty.
It was all about batteries, right? People were upset because they were saying they were screwing with their batteries. They basically just paid you to. CBC is not a serious organization. We all knew that. With the federal government planning to phase out sales of new gas-powered vehicles during next... This is a headline, and this is a story. Next week's decade, many drivers question how they will fare on cold prairie days like this week's. But two electric car enthusiasts who chatted with host Leisha Grabinski on CBC's Blue Sky this week say they love driving their vehicles in the winter, don't they?
It's an idiot puff piece where all they did was just get some anecdotal conversations from people who already have EVs, which is getting a little bit worrisomely cultish, by the way.
CBC is definitely not a serious organization. On Thursday,
just a headline.
Chrystia Freeland was asked whether Canada has an immigration problem. In response, she suggested Canada has a housing problem.
Okay. The headline is, there are no simple answers to the immigration and housing question. I would argue that, yes, there are simple answers to the immigration and housing question. Look, if you're eating a bunch of food and you're full, you stop eating.
CBC can't do anything right. A network problem that took many CBC radio programs off air across the country Wednesday morning has been resolved. Quoted Thompson, a spokesman for CBC, said the network's ability to produce any broadcast content was caused by a major technical equipment failure.
Yeah, they fucking suck at their jobs. We pay them $1.3 billion a year and they can't even keep the lights on.
COVID rules socially distanced from science. Dr. Anthony Fauci confessed to lawmakers Tuesday that guidelines to keep 6 feet of separation sort of just appeared without any scientific input. It's not a big deal, dudes. It's not a big deal.
Go back to one of my first podcast episodes where I'm like, did they just round it up to 6 feet? Is it like 5'11"? Is it 6'5"? Where did this number come from? Well, it turns out they pulled it out of their poopers.
Canadian polls are garbage. I think I got this handy here. How about we go here? It says, who do you want to win the U.S. presidential election? Polling Canada says Biden 66%.
Okay. So this is actually aging poorly given what's happening in Ohio right now. But my take on it was that there's a whole lot more Republican people running than just Trump. And so you're like, why not mention any of them? Why not ask Democrat Republican? No, because if we set it up shitty enough, it'll skew the numbers our way. And this is classic Canadian polling.
I totally got too quickly. My finger was like just hammering away. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Oh boy. You know, speaking of Trump makes Iowa great for the first time. Wouldn't you know it? It says breaking. CNN projects that Donald Trump will win the Iowa Republican caucuses just 30 minutes after voting started. Well, that was fast. You don't say.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's taking something like 60 some percent. What was it? I was kind of disappointed that Ramaswamy is so low. He says a lot of awesome things. I want to hear more about that guy. He does a great job of handling the media. I'd say he does a better job than Polyev of handling the media. And so, yeah.
Weffers be planning. The World Economic Forum is back meeting this week. So I thought it was just... We should probably put that in there.
They're in Davos.
They kind of messed with our lives and are continuing to mess with our lives.
And they're complaining about how evil Elon Musk is.
Right. Yeah.
And how scary the new Twitter name is and how it's just this evil place where people
talking about
express thoughts, where people are allowed to express thoughts now and they have opinions.
Man,
we should have asked those guys about the obviously upcoming NDP leadership.
Oh, well.
Missed opportunity. I just thought of it now.
The snow don't stop the Bills Mafia. I don't know if anyone else was saying this. I know the NFL fans are still probably watching the game that's ongoing if it hasn't finished, but this is the Buffalo Bills. And I was talking with the brothers today. I'm like, you embrace this. You know, Buffalo's just like, this is our place, right? Like, and then of course they go on, the Bills win 31-17. Like, but you know,
this is people getting to their seats.
Oh, that's awesome. That's just, that's great. Oh man. Like it doesn't get much better than that. Okay.
That reminds me of like, I think it was a 2008 Vanier Cup. It's like minus 40. It's the one that they actually did in Saskatoon. So went back for that and was running around with my shirt off at minus 40, trying to get everybody cheered up. But the frickin' Lavelle Frogs ended up taking it anyway.
Oh, it can't get much better than that. Or can it?
Oh, seriously?
The Oilers, baby.
This isn't on the docket. This isn't on the docket. Oh,
I snuck it in. Snuck it in. Hey, woo, woo. 10 in a row. We're hot. We're hot right now. Anyway,
you guys just beat the Sharks. That's not even an accomplishment.
Actually, we beat the Canadiens. We beat the Montreal Canadiens. That was the game that put us 10 in a row.
Yeah, but I mean, one of your right recent there. Games was against the Sharks. It's not an accomplishment. I feel like I could beat the Sharks. Okay? And the Canadiens, they do everything Hab-assed.
Okay.
Because they're the Habs, Sean.
Back to your regular scheduled show. That was the pace. You know, I'd be curious if we did a show that pace the entire time. We had like 30 headlines and we just rattle them off and see where we get. Go back to the original model. It was like as fast as we could go. I kind of like the pace we set there. Here we go.
Okay.
I'm just throwing it out there. I'm you know, when you get that pace going, that's a lot of fun.
Do we want to do a super rapid fire episode?
Yes, we do. I mean, what's the worst thing that happens, folks? Nobody likes it.
Okay.
Possible.
All right.
Possible. Toronto has banned. Oh, Toronto is a cancer on the country. This is like the amount of stuff going on in Ontario. You remember we made the joke last week about planes don't even want to go to Ontario because the plane that was taken off to go to Ontario, California. And then this week you have like six stories coming from Ontario where you're just like, what is going on? Here we go. Mm-hmm. Toronto has banned tobogganing. You may have heard this before from us too. This is in a new one at 45 because, hills across the city due to safety concerns. And one counselor says he's not happy with the move because there are more important issues that should be drawing the attention of the city.
What was
staff.
The counselor's name?
Dang it, I didn't even look.
Brad Bradford. A name.
Great name. And if you may recall back in week 35, we're in 89. Week 35. Think about that. Tobogganing could still be banned at all but two parks in Oshawa. That's what we talked about. Oh, and I remember being
now it's rearing its ugly head again.
What a wild thing. And this was in, forgive me, it was in, it said Toronto, right off the hop. Toronto, like the city of Toronto, figure it out. Now, carrying on here, the city of Toronto is considering at 10.5% property tax hike to help fill a nearly $1.8 billion budget shortfall. Okay. Then we'll go Mississauga. Reyes said, while he's a fan of the multicultural food market, he also sees it as becoming a victim of its own success. Drawing thousands of
local residents are complaining because this nearby strip mall is too popular.
Its popularity has turned it into a nuisance for those living nearby and a safety hazard for pedestrians and drivers.
Successful businesses in our community.
And then we flip over to Peterborough, okay? Young convenience store clerk has been charged after he allegedly struck a would-be robber with the same baseball bat that originally been wielded by the assailant. The clerk has been charged with aggravated assault and appeared on court on January 6th and was held in custody. What is going on, Ontario?
Now, to be fair, on that one, I got some clarity on it. I was talking about it with Mrs. Tews before the episode, and she's like, well, yeah, but you know why he got charged with aggravated assault. And so the article we had didn't mention this, which I think was a fairly important fucking detail. He took the bat away from the guy, and when the guy ran out of the store, he ran out into the street after him and beat him with the baseball bat outside. He chased him down and beat him up with his own baseball bat outside.
If you'd been hit by that guy, because it literally says in the article he'd taken the bat after being hit by it, I might have chased him out in the street and beat the crap out of him too.
That's probably pretty
fair. I don't know, folks, if that's like great epiphany. Oh, the guy comes into the store, hits him with the bat. He takes the bat. He chases him down, beats the crap out of him. It's like, I think it's justified.
You know, the other thing is that the guy who got beat with the bat is still out on the loose. So he didn't formally press charges. It's not like he went to the police and was like, hi, I'd like to file a report, please. I was robbing this fucking store and the guy beat me with the bat. Can you guys send him to jail or like give him a ticket or I don't know, maybe just do some kind of like a police thing. No, he ran away, and the cops are like, well,
we got to charge you.
We got to charge you. And the guy didn't be like, well, where's the evidence?
Oh my God.
Is anybody? So anyway, yeah.
That's a ridiculous story. The Wright brothers are doing barrel rolls in their graves.
Speaking of ridiculous.
The Federal Aviation Administration, FAA, is actively recruiting workers who suffer severe intellectual, that is in parentheses, disabilities, psychiatric problems, and other mental and physical conditions under diversity and inclusion hiring initiative spelled out on the agency's website. Quoted, targeted disabilities are those disabilities that the federal government, as a matter of policy, has identified for special emphasis in recruitment and hiring, the FAA's website states. They include hearing, vision, missing extremities, partial paralysis, complete paralysis, epilepsy, severe intellectual disability, psychiatric disability, and dwarfism.
Okay. I would have no problem with the pilot using a high chair. All right. Or a booster seat. I could live with that. All right. But I feel like having a blind pilot, probably not a great thing. Somebody with severe mental, not to sound
complete paralysis.
I don't want to have paralysis. I'm getting to that. Okay. I don't want to sound insensitive, but I don't want a suicidal pilot. Okay. And if you need to fly the plane using the Christopher Reeve straw, I have concerns. I don't think any of this is out of line.
Oh boy. Oh boy. Trudeau freefall continues. Two things here. First, I'll read the first one. Former Prime Minister Jean Chrétien says, deciding when it's time to step down and leave politics is simple, but very personal. Chrétien sat down with CTV's Question Period host Vassi Kepelos for a wide-ranging, I'm trying not to read do you want me to read that, or do I want me to finish here?
I was just laughing. It just, yeah. Why is there Braille bumps on drive-through teller machines? Or when the city of Calgary mandated that there needed to be Braille on the scooters? Stephen Hawking, this is your captain. Like, imagine if you need to, like, type out the message that you need to give to everybody. Like, how long it takes you to type out, like, we will be cruising at 38,000
Have you seen feet. Chappelle's? Have you watched it yet?
No, dude.
You haven't watched it when he makes fun of people with disabilities? Oh, my God. Yeah,
maybe we should have mentioned the fact that Spain just recently elected an elected official with
Down syndrome. She has Down syndrome, and they have an elected official with Down syndrome.
Yeah, I mean, still better than Trudeau.
You're not wrong there. Okay, anyways, going back to this. The listeners chiming in with some just absolute gems. Okay.
Yeah, sorry we were missing all the ones that were coming in when the other guys were on. It was kind of a limited window thing.
For a wide-ranging exclusive interview, blah, 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 blah. Quoted, it is time for him to decide what is the best for him, what is the best for the party, and what is best for the country. He also said it's a very personal decision.
That.
And Abbott, this comes or at the same time as Abacus data said, overall, 20% of Canadians would vote for the Liberals, 24% if a federal election were held now, compared to 41% for the Conservatives and 18% for the New Democrats.
Yeah, so they're tanking, like they're 24%. Tanking.
Correct.
That's they've shed over a third of what they had in the last election. Now, the thing about Chrétien being like, he needs to decide what's best for him, what's best for the party, and what's best for the country. If you're in it for the country, you don't care what's best for the party. But that's the thing, is that the Liberals are like, what's best for the Liberals? Quit fucking worrying about what's best for your party and actually do your goddamn job for once in your life, you entitled prick.
I wouldn't hold my breath, too. I don't see anything coming. That's me. This is a strange story. Can I just say, like,
this is completely expected. This is the kind of thing they just lost a Supreme Court decision in BC, and now it's totally legal for junkies to do whatever drugs they want in playgrounds.
Yeah. What I mean is every time I think we've hit a new low, we find a new way to just go a little deeper. Fentanyl no longer PG-13. In what
constitutes?
Oh boy.
Because you're constituted.
A trampling of parental rights. British Columbia recently authorized the provision of safer supply fentanyl to youth across the province, regardless if parents are informed of or agree to this measure. The only special requirement for underage patients is the use of two prescriber approval system, wherein one prescriber conducts a patient intake interview and another reviews the client's charts before signing off. The protocols do not provide minimum age for when youth can receive recreational fentanyl. Like, what on earth is
this
that?
This is the exact slippery slope shit we were talking about with the drag queen story hour. Say, you let them do all this weird shit in front of kids. What's next? Drugs? Boom. It happened. Not yeah, big lip, but like, this is like literally a Casey could go.
Can you imagine giving fentanyl to a minor? Like, what? What? Like, somebody needs to get pulled out in the backyard and just beat the crap out of him and done with this. This is ridiculous.
When we said we wanted our freedoms back, this wasn't quite what we had in mind.
Pronoun crowd, anti-corona. Corano. I can't, whatever. Fan Expo returns to Vancouver next month for the list.
Real quick. We forgot. Actually, you know what? I'm disappointed that we didn't get either one of the gentlemen to comment on this. I found this meme that's absolutely perfect. It's a silhouette of a windmill and a stripper dancing around it. And it says, wind turbines are like strippers. They stop working when you stop throwing money at them. I would have really been interested in hearing their comments on it, but I forgot.
Next time. Okay. Fan Expo returns to Vancouver next month with a list of stars, including Elijah Wood and Danny Trejo. But one guest is raising some eyebrows. Of course, there's always one. Gina Carano is best known for her work in The Mandalorian and Deadpool. However, her strong political views on issues such as the 2020 U.S. election, vaccines, and the Holocaust, what did she say about the Holocaust? Doesn't matter. Have prompted a call for her to be removed from the Vancouver event. At this point,
It was very low key. And the other guy, Pedro Pascal, had said something almost identical about it. But his was more along the line of the message, and hers was implying that it was against the message. And so now she's evil. That's why she got kicked off The Mandalorian, was for that Holocaust thing. Yeah.
This article reads like, just,
it doesn't even try to be unbiased. It doesn't even try to get anybody
else. Cry
your opinion.
Go cry somewhere else. It's like, I can't go to this because they're bringing,
I felt
this
conflicted
there,
because this is an event I've been to in the past that I enjoyed, and I felt so welcome and safe. And my disappointment was like one of the few safe spaces that we have no longer feel safe. Okay, so it's got to be safe for everybody but Gina Carano. And honestly, if you don't want, like, have you ever been to a Comic-Con?
No, I can't say.
They're wonderful. They're amazing. And there's booths. So there'll just be like a table set up. There'll be a whole bunch of them in a row. And, you know, one guy will be here and then the next guy and whatever else. And you can wait in line and take pictures with them and maybe get something signed or whatever else. And it's not as though you're even forced to go near them, because if you wanted to see Gina Carano, you'd have to wait in the whole damn line and get to the front. So if you don't like the fact that she's there, you don't even have to get within 50 feet of her. You won't be able to get within 50 feet of her without actively waiting in goddamn line. You need to make a conscious decision to get anywhere in her vicinity. How the fuck is that not safe? And she's only going to be there probably for, you know, a few hours one day, a few hours on each one of the days or something like that. So they're not even trying to be honest about this, and it's so fucking infuriating that they're doing about it as something cool as Comic-Con and Gina Carano. Piss me off.
Election Canada opens the hood. Yeah, okay. Well, Election Canada is trying to insulate Canadian voters from false narratives and information during the next federal election by launching an online tool to help voters cut through misinformation and disinformation about the electoral process in Canada.
I've heard this one before. I've seen this one. It's a classic.
Visitors to ElectoFacts can scroll through 8 categories where disinformation is taking place: special ballots, ways to vote, the counting process, voting technology, foreign interference, the administration of elections, the administration of Elections Canada, and campaign finance. Don't worry, Tuesday got you covered.
Well, and it talked about the very well storied Russian attempts to influence this election. Why in the fuck would Russia want anybody other than Justin Trudeau in charge of this country? The absolute wet noodle who fucks everything up. If your rival country, quasi enemy country, like if we decided that we hated, I don't know, Botswana. Or Denmark, actually, because we were talking about Denmark before. Let's go with Denmark. Nobody can get mad about us picking Denmark, okay? If Denmark got rid of their monarchy and they elected some absolute goddamn idiot, we would be like, okay, this is perfect. We could finally use it to settle the border disputes up in northern Canada, which they would say is Denmark. And we could just, you know, move the line over a little bit. We could capitalize on the fact that they fucking suck. That's what you want. And if Canada is a rival country to Russia, Russia doesn't want Polyev. Well, actually, O'Toole would have been all right, too, for them, really. But the thing about it is that Trudeau is the fucking worst. You would want him in charge. And the funny thing, I was thinking about this the other day with this whole Russia trying to influence the U.S. election, because I had the same argument. I'm like, you don't want Trump to win. You'd want Biden to win. But then I'm like, well, you know what? The only decent argument you could make for him wanting Trump to win is that the Bidens have strong ties with all the corruption in Ukraine via Hunter. And so the only way that you can make one of those weird narratives work is if you admit that the other conspiracy theory is valid. And so it's an interesting rock and a hard place that they're in that they haven't realized yet. Anyways, I'm going off on a tangent. But, oh, one other thing. Sorry, I know you buzzed. Whatever, I suck at this. I've only done it like 89 times. The other thing is that they said that those 200 and some thousand ballots that never got counted,
yeah,
this is the first time it's ever come out that it's because they didn't get there in time. Does anybody remember anybody at all on the internet saying that entrusting your ballot to a place as fucking incompetent as Canada Post is probably a bad idea? Anybody say that? Anybody say anything like that? I said it. And yeah, probably Canada Post fucked over 250,000 fucking people out of their
200,000 people voted and it never got counted.
200 and change.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. A bumpy road to recovery. In an extraordinary turn of events, a pothole on the road from Padialia to Carnell became an unlikely savior for 80-year-old Darshan Singh Brar, who was declared dead by doctors on his way home from his last rites. And they hit a pothole, and it brought him back to life.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, it's one, like,
that's about as happy news you can get. Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty good. Like, it bodes well for Saskatchewan, I tell you what. It's amazing. Like, if hitting a pothole can bring you back to life, I'm surprised anyone in Saskatchewan has ever died.
I tell you what, you're not wrong there. Although Saskatchewan roads slowly getting a little better. Yeah, slowly. Maybe. Well,
Mashup
89, folks, in the books. You know, we put on a master class of speed on the last, like...
Oh, yeah.
We had, like, I don't know how many headlines we had there, but we had a lot. There's a lot in there, folks. There's been a lot go on in the last 10 days. 7 days.
Yep.
Like, what is happening here? Can't even keep up with half of it, you know? And it's only the beginning of 2024 with the U.S. election happening later on this year, as we all know. And, I can probably assume it's only going to pick up. Would I be wrong in assuming that?
It's going to be great. You know, with the U.S. election coming up pretty soon, if I for any of my American listeners down there, Vance, if you're checking things out, if I was you, the best thing you could probably invest in right now, duffel bag manufacturing.
Duffel bag manufacturing?
Yeah.
Alrighty then.
Because there was giant duffel bags of votes in the last election, and there's going to be so many of them this time that if you invested in duffel bag manufacturing, you would make a fortune on the increase in...
It seems I'm a little dense over here, folks. Thanks for the explanation, Twos. That was clarifying. That's going to do it for us here on Mashup 89.
You're killing me here, Sean. You're killing me.
I hope everybody enjoyed having a couple of politicians on at the start. You know, at least to kind of talk us through what on earth had happened on the weekend, you know, and I'm sure there's a lot more questions. I haven't even had time. Like, I'm looking at all the comments. I'm like, holy crap, that got some
it
people
blew
up fired
up. The comments and yeah, they're appreciated in limited time windows, right?
All right. 89 in the books. You know what that means. Next week, number 90. Woo. And we'll see you then.
All right. Who's? So next time it's a big week, we're just going to do the whole thing rapid fire.
Rapid fire. Yeah.
I don't, well, just like if next week's a slow week and we do the whole thing rapid fire, we might be out here in 7 minutes, right?
Yeah, but if we're out here in 7 minutes, it'd be like, and we're out. I'm good. Listen, folks, buckle up. We're doing it. I don't care what the heck comes next week.
Okay.
I like it.
All right.
All right. Folks.
Just be like, start off with the happy news. Peace out, everybody.
Till next week, Twos. We'll see everybody next week.
Thanks.